From the studios of Central Coast Public Radio KUSP in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Kay Thompson was a singer, arranger, songwriter, actress, nightclub star, and the creator of Eloise, the little girl who lived in the Plaza Hotel in a series of children's books. Sam Ervin is a filmmaker and author who has devoted considerable effort to a Kay Thompson resurrection. He compiled a fabulous 3-CD set for the Sepia label of Kay Thompson recordings, and he is the author of a new biography, Kay Thompson, From Funny Face to Eloise. Sam Ervin, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Oh, thank you, Gary. I'm happy to be here.
When Andy Williams was on this program a while back, I asked him to describe the nightclub act in which he and his brothers appeared with Kay Thompson, a nightclub act that wowed them at Ciro's on the Sunset Strip in Vegas and Miami. But, you know, he didn't really give a very vivid description. I was sort of disappointed. He said, well, we sang songs. and the whole idea of a nightclub act is kind of like a lost art form today. And I wanted to get a vivid picture of, you know, what it looked like. So I wonder if you could tell us, because I know you did so much research for your book, Kay Thompson, From Funny Face to Eloise. What was it like in 1947 to go to Ciro's and see Kay Thompson and the Williams Brothers?
Well, the Kay Thompson and the Williams Brothers nightclub act was revolutionary on every level. Up until that time, you know, performers in a nightclub would stand at a microphone and the band would be behind them, and that was pretty much it. And Kay wanted to bring a miniature Broadway show to these little nightclub stages. And she had the choreographer named Bob Alton, who was one of the big choreographers at MGM, where she had been working for years as the head of the vocal department. And they collaborated and created this wild and crazy nightclub act where it was just one number after another, machine gun paced, and their choreography was insanely athletic and throwing Kay up in the air and, you know, running all over the stage and doing acrobatics and comical different configurations. Well, of course, they could not hold microphones or, you know, be at a microphone stand, and back then there weren't any, there was no such thing as wireless mics or anything, so Kay came up with this idea that they would have to put microphones around the ceiling. And it was sort of inspired by the Hollywood movies that she'd worked on, because they would have these boom mics that would, hoisted over the actors with these long arms, you know. And so she was like, well, we've got to do it like a Hollywood movie and have microphones all over the ceiling of the stage. So they literally, she and Andy Williams and his brothers, got up on ladders and hung several microphones so that they could be hands-free. And that had never been done. And it was actually something that inspired, you know, everybody copied it. And even Broadway up until that time was not mic'd in any way. And even Broadway started to take notice and adopting that idea. But the show itself, they didn't stop for applause in between numbers. They just kept going. And it was 40 minutes of just nonstop craziness. And they would be so tired and so sweaty by the end of it that, like, the guys wouldn't even be able to get their neckties off. They'd have to cut them off because they'd be so wet. The knot wouldn't pull out. And it was just crazy. And Kay also had the idea that leave them wanting more. She would take one bow and leave the stage, and no matter how much clapping and thunderous applause and standing ovation would bring her back for an encore, she wanted people to come back and see the show again.
you paint a picture of opening night there at Ciro's with all of these people in the audience. What an incredible night it would have been to go back in time with your autograph book and see all those
people. It was like the Academy Awards. The audiences were so star-studded that no regular people would be spotted in the audience. I mean, everybody from Clark Gable to Betty Davis to Barbara Stanwyck to Joan Crawford to Judy Garland to Frank Sinatra. I mean, every seat was filled with stars, and it was just insane. It was really the hot ticket in town.
Well, you know, time passes, and so I guess it's not all that surprising that people don't remember Kay Thompson anymore. I mean, a lot of people don't even know who Bing Crosby is, so I guess it'd be easy to forget Kay Thompson, although, according to your book, she was an incredibly influential and important person in Hollywood history. But so her career included movies and records and radio. How did it all begin for her?
Well, she, of course, grew up in St. Louis. Her birth name was Catherine Fink. People called her Kitty Fink. And she came to Hollywood and New York and changed her name to Kay Thompson and became a big radio star in the 1930s, not only as a singer, but also as an arranger. She was the first and only female arranger in the entire business. And she also headed up a choral group called the Kay Thompson Rhythm Singers.
Did she did she arrange musical instruments as well as voices, or primarily voices?
She just arranged voices. She did what's called vocal arrangements, where she would, you know, she would at a piano figure out different, you know, innovative arrangements of songs. She usually would take, she'd usually do the song straight for one verse, and then she would reinvent it and go off into the wild blue yonder and change up the melody even, and change, you know, the key, and change, you know, the tempo, and it would just become this wild and crazy Kay Thompson arrangement.
Just one of those things. Things. Those things. Hear a bell tingling. One of those things. One of those nights. One of those things, praise. If we thought a bit of the end of it, we'd never painted the town.
Been the town.
We'd have been aware that our love affair's too hot not to cool down. Goodbye and amen.
Toodaloo.
Here's hoping we never meet again. Such fun, just one of those things.
Just one of those things.
Thinking of
things.
Oh, so many.
Things.
All kinds of
things.
The way you said.
Things.
The way you did.
Things.
How you loved.
Certain things.
How I loved.
Everything.
Lovely stuff.
So passé.
Foolish stuff.
Be blasé.
Over and done with.
Gone, babe, gone.
Done and over. Those crazy
ting-a-ling.
Things. Hear the bell tingling. Turn to those things. If we thought a bit
of
the end of it, we never painted the town.
Stop.
We'd have been aware that our love affair was too hot not to cool down.
But it was just one of those things. Very jazzy, very much swing, very influential in those genres. And Hollywood copied her arrangements and eventually hired her to come to Hollywood and do the arrangements at MGM, where she became head of the vocal arranging department. And she not only did the arrangements for all the big MGM musicals like The Harvey Girls and Ziegfeld Follies and Good News and jillions of others, she personally coached all of the big stars. She would, you know, she coached Judy Garland, Frank Sinatra, Lena Horne, you name it, she was teaching them how to deliver the song, how to sell it, what to do with, even what to do physically with their hands and movements. She wasn't necessarily the choreographer, but if, you know, she would, she would tell people, not with every line in a song do you gesture your arms. You pick and choose. You know, she'd really work with them for all the nuances of how to deliver and sell a song. And in the cases of actors who didn't have the greatest singing voices, like Lucille Ball or even Angela Lansbury back then, she would be in charge of finding the right person to dub their voices on the songs. And then Kay would be on the set telling Lucille Ball whether her lip syncing was credible or not. And directing, along with the director of the movie, she'd be helping to direct the actors to lip sync properly. So she just was, you know, a real dynamo.
So the singing...
But she got tired of... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask, when a singer who can't sing, or, you know, or they have their voice dubbed, the recording is made first, and then the actor must make it sound like they're... seem like they're singing to it, or is it the other way around, where they sing it and then the professional singer sings to their lip movements?
Back in the 1940s, almost in every case, when you would see a musical number in a movie, the music was pre-recorded, uh-huh. the singing and everything. And when they would get to the set, then it would be, they would do play what they call playback, where they would play the pre-recording, and then the actor would lip-sync either to themselves, if they were the ones who did the singing, or in the case, as I said, of actors who didn't have the greatest voice, someone else would have pre-recorded a vocal track for them, and they would lip-sync to that.
So even singers had to lip-sync?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So everybody was lip-syncing back then, exactly.
Oh, interesting.
But Kay got, you know, she really wanted to be a star in movies, and her looks weren't the greatest, and so, you know, the people at MGM didn't really see it that way, and it was also a factory. You very easily got pigeonholed, and she was so good at what she did that they just didn't have anybody to replace her, and they kept her busy 24/7, and so she finally kind of got fed up with being the wind under everybody else's wings. And so in 1947, she quit the studio and formed this nightclub act, Kay Thompson and the Williams Brothers, and in which she would be the star. And they really conquered the nightclub circuit and became the highest paid nightclub act in the world and broke records at every major city. And it was just incredible. And the unfortunate thing is that no film was made of it. Back in 1947, TV wasn't even, was barely getting started. And so, you know, she did very little television until later in the 50s. And so there just isn't much of a record of the nightclub act visually. I mean, there were a few recordings, but that's about all we have left of it to really see. And so, you know, if you weren't there, it's kind of lost history. It's really, really unfortunate.
I guess that's true with great Broadway performances, too, although we have the scripts of the plays.
Yeah.
We're speaking with Sam Irvin, and he's just written a fabulous book, and it's called Kay Thompson, From Funny Face to Eloise. And so Kay Thompson was kind of at the top of the world for a while in the 1940s. Now, as she begins to emerge, you know, in the pages of your book, I think she's a genius when it comes to show business, she does seem like maybe like sort of a nut.
Yes, she had two sides to her. She was quite a genius, and she was also a world-class eccentric and could be very frustrating. When she did this nightclub act, She really kind of was in charge of everything. She wrote the music, she wrote the arrangements, she hired the choreographer and very much collaborated with him. She got the backup group, the Williams Brothers. She had discovered them and discovered little Andy Williams when he was 19. And so it was all her baby. And when it became such an overnight sensation, I think it went to her head, and from then on, if she wasn't in charge, she really wasn't interested, and she didn't like collaborating with people very much. And by the mid-50s, when the nightclub thing started to wind down for her, she decided to write a book called Eloise, about the little girl who lives at the Plaza Hotel, which was Kay's invention, and that book became this overnight sensation too. And so it was kind of like she could do no wrong, which helped her ego bloat even further.
Yeah.
And so it was just really, it got really hard for people to negotiate and deal with her. And a lot of projects that she was offered, she ended up not doing because they couldn't come to terms, or she would make too many demands, and it just wouldn't work out. The one of them that did work out by a miracle, which is too long a story to tell you here, but it was the movie Funny Face, and it starred Fred Astaire and Audrey Hepburn, and it was all about the fashion industry, and Kay Thompson played the fashion magazine editor, and she opens the film with this incredible number called Think Pink, and does duets in the movie with Audrey and with Fred, and is, you know, just a real cyclone blowing through that film. And all the critics said that she stole the movie right out from under Audrey and Fred.
Think pink when you shop for summer clothes. Think pink if you want that Kelpie shows. Red is dead, blue is through, green's obscene, brown's taboo, and there is not the slightest excuse for plum abuse. Or chartreuse. Think pink. Forget that Dior says black and rust. Think pink. Who cares if the new look has no bust? Now, I wouldn't presume to tell a woman what a woman ought to think, but tell her if she's gotta think. Think pink.
Oh, just to think about it. We're warm as mink about it.
I'm tickled pink about it.
Pink for shoes. Pink for home. Pink for gloves.
Pink for cheeks and pink at your lips. Pink for shirts and all of your slips. Just a touch of pink at your knees. And if you please.
What?
Pink chemise. In pink, Madame will be more star aboard. In pink, she'll be Harper's Bazaar aboard. So turn a new page and let's dig in. We can't begin to paste or patch. We've really got to start from scratch. The first page must be an eye-grabber. No, not circles. They make me dizzy. Stripes are chic, but not lying down. Get them up, up, up! Needs contrast. Let's save the pink. That's got pizzazz. Now we want a fabulous brunette dressed pour le sport. White? I've been screaming pink. Not that pink. Stripe it up a bit. On her, let the stripes lie down. Marvelous. That's the page.
This was a huge triumph for her, but she didn't follow it up with other movies. You know, she could have had this giant movie career, and it just didn't happen because she was too demanding. And it was really, really unfortunate because a lot of her talent went to waste.
Now, I guess drugs played a role, not the kind of drugs, I guess, that we think of today in terms of drugs, but drugs were a part of her life and influenced this period in her life.
Well, she went to a notorious doctor named Dr. Max Jacobson, who was known as Dr. Feelgood. And he was, supposedly injecting people with this, what was called a vitamin cocktail. And he was injecting everybody in showbiz in New York and a lot of politicians and everybody. And Kay got involved in this, and it turned out that his injections were heavily dosed with methamphetamines. And she got hooked on that, as did a lot of other people, including Eddie Fisher, and the list goes on and on and on. And eventually, John F. Kennedy, when he was president, and Jackie Kennedy, and, I mean, you would not believe the people who were involved in.
Isn't that hard to believe that now, you know, you could never imagine that somebody could slip the president a shot of methamphetamine without everybody knowing?
Right. I know. It's quite astonishing, but it happened, and it's all documented, and there are FBI records of it. I mean, it's not something that is a huge revelation in my book.
Uh-huh.
But it's something that the general public doesn't hear that much about, and I was just astonished at who all got involved. But it really, the methamphetamines sort of, at least in the case of Kay Thompson, it also helped to bloat her ego and give her this false sense of empowerment and entitlement that made it very, very difficult for her to negotiate and deal on other projects. And that was another major factor why her potential just never really went as far as it could have easily gone.
Now, Sam Irvin, it seems to me that you must have been working on this book for a long time because you cite interviews that were conducted many years ago. How long did you work on this project?
Well, Kay died in 1998, and I started working on it about a year later. I just couldn't believe that no one had done a book on her, and everything that I learned about her was just jaw-dropping. And I just decided, well, if nobody else is going to do it, I'm going to do it. I have the passion to do it, and I normally, my day job is directing movies and television, and so it started out as just a sort of hobby that I would work on between projects. And it just kept growing and growing, and everybody that I interviewed, each person would tell me five more people to interview, and by the end of it, I'd interviewed over 200 people who knew and worked with Kay.
Tell us, who were some of the great people that you got to interview?
Well, Kay's goddaughter is Liza Minnelli, and that was certainly one of them. Andy Williams and his there were four Williams brothers, one of whom is no longer with us, but I've interviewed the three surviving Williams brothers, including Andy. Angela Lansbury, of course, and who knew Kay for many decades, and Stephen Sondheim and Mel Brooks and Janet Leigh and Princess Yasmin Khan, who's the daughter of Rita Hayworth, and Lorna Luft and Michael Feinstein, and gosh, it just goes on and on and on.
Sounds like fun.
It was incredibly fun. Well, absolutely amazing stories.
Well, speaking of all these stars, now you're a film director, and you've directed some great stars. You directed Rod Steiger, for instance.
Yeah, I did. My very first feature was called Guilty as Charged. It was in 1991, and it starred Rod Steiger. Can you imagine your first film directing a lion like that? And I had to be the lion tamer. And it was great, though. And he was so generous and giving to me as a, you know, neophyte director. Mm-hmm. And the funniest story is that at one point he said, he came over to me and he said, "Now, how wide is this shot? Is it a close-up, or how far down my body do you see?" And I said, "Well, it's about middle of your torso." And he goes, "Oh, good, I can take off my pants." and he did. He took his pants off and shot the scene in his boxer shorts because he was hot.
That's acting. I wonder if he's wearing pants in the back seat of the taxi when Marlon Brando says he could have been a contender, because you can only see.
It makes you wonder. It really does make you wonder. It was hilarious.
How often did he take his pants off? Speaking of that, you directed the late David Carradine in a film. How was he?
I did. And in fact, David had a brush with Kay Thompson when he was a kid. When he was 6 years old, living at the Garden of Allah in Hollywood, Kay was a neighbor. And so I was able to talk to him a little bit about her. You know, I mean, you don't have great a lot of memories when you're 6 years old of grown-ups, but he did actually remember her, and he said he was always running around the place with his toy pistols, playing cowboys and Indians and shooting up everybody, and it was very funny. And, you know, Kay based a lot of Eloise on various showbiz kids that she had run into in her life, you know, the mischievous things that they would be doing,
mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that David was, you know, part of that melting pot.
Let's talk a little bit about Eloise, because Eloise has, of all the things that Kay Thompson has done, has probably survived the best, since Eloise's new children are experiencing Eloise even today. All the books are in print and popular, and there's even more books and so forth, and movies and everything else.
Yeah, it's quite an industry that won't stop. It just keeps on going. It was an amazingly successful endeavor on her part. I don't think that she had any idea that it was going to take off the way it did. And in fact, it's really consumed her life for a while, to the point where she started calling it her Frankenstein monster. And she didn't quite know what to do with it. And at a certain point, she got kind of burned out from it and stopped doing more books and stopped the merchandising and kind of, pulled it off the market for a while. But eventually, they reissued the first book. And then after she died, all the books came out. And then there's been TV movies with Julie Andrews playing Nanny on the Disney did for ABC, and mm-hmm. and dolls from Madame Alexander. They have a whole line of high-end dolls, and there's an Eloise shop at the Plaza that's the most lavish, incredible place I've ever seen. It's several rooms and just absolutely gorgeous.
Who gets the money?
Well, it is now controlled by the Kay Thompson estate, which is Kay's niece and nephew, the son and daughter of her older sister, Blanche, who died in 2002.
Eloise, 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 who is the little girl who lives at the Plaza in New York?
That's me, Eloise. I'm six. I live on the top floor.
Who is the little girl who knows everybody's business in New York?
I spend an enormous amount of time in the lobby. I have to see what's going on there.
Who's on the telephone most of the day?
I have to call room service a lot and tell them to charge, please, and thank you very much.
Who's in and out and up and down and in everybody's way?
That's what Mr. Salamone says, and he ought to know. He's the manager, for Lord's sake.
Who's up at break of day creating a terrible racket in the halls?
Sometimes I take two sticks and skitter them along the woodwork.
Who has a lovely way of writing her name in lipstick on the walls?
My mother is 30 and wears a 3.5 shoe.
Who's the little darling who'll drive you out of your head, but you love her just the same?
After all, I'm only six.
Who's the little girl who's only good when she's in bed? Eloise is her name.
That's me, Eloise.
Eloise. Eloise.
Eloise.
That's Nanny. Eloise. She's my nurse. She's English and wears tissue paper in her dress. And you can hear it.
Eloise, what are you doing?
Here's the thing of it. I have to open that window wider because there's this pigeon who keeps hanging around out there, and I'm going to squonk him in his head.
Eloise, what are you doing? Come in off that ledge, my dear, and close the windows at once before we all freeze.
Well, Nanny, actually I am rather tired.
Good night, my dear.
Good night, Nanny.
Good night, Eloise.
Eloise, Eloise.
Oh, my Lord, there's so much to do. Tomorrow, I think I'll pour a pitcher of water down the mail chute.
Eloise!
That's me! Eloise!
The book is called Kay Thompson, From Funny Face to Eloise, and the author is Sam Irvin. Sam, thank you so much for spending some time with us on From the Bookshelf.
It's been so much fun.
That's it for this week's edition of From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the show and that you'll come back and see us again next time. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at KUSP.org or find us on Facebook and iTunes. I want to thank my guest, Sam Irvin, author of a new book called Kay Thompson, From Funny Face to Eloise. I want to thank our From the Bookshelf staff, the lovely Miss Breanne Beal, for all of her hard work. Thanks, Breanne. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.